Hi, everyone. It's Tanzina Vega, and you're with me on The Takeaway. We've got a lot to get to today, including articles of impeachment introduced in Congress, and we'll have that coming up later in the hour. But first, we begin with the war in Afghanistan.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan.
President George W. Bush, 2001, announcing the beginning of the war in Afghanistan following the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
We must keep the pressure on al-Qaeda, and to do that, we must increase the stability and capacity of our partners in the region.
President Barack Obama, 2009, announcing an increase of 30,000 U.S. troops in the region.
Are we winning this war?
We have had a great deal of success in achieving the mission that our forces have been given.
Is that the functional equivalent of winning?
We're making progress.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates and General David Petraeus, 2011, on what they called, quote, the successful war in Afghanistan.
I have plans on Afghanistan that if I wanted to win that war, Afghanistan would be wiped off the face of the earth. It would be gone. It would be over in literally in 10 days. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to go that route.
And President Trump, July of 2019. This year marks the 18th anniversary of the ongoing U.S. war in Afghanistan, making it the longest war in U.S. history, spanning three presidential administrations. More than 2,000 U.S. troops have died, more than 24,000 Afghan civilians have been killed, and over $900 billion have been spent.
Our troops will fight to win. We will fight to win.
But while U.S. officials continued with the public campaign of a successful war effort, behind the scenes, a different story was playing out. A new investigation from the Washington Post reveals officials acknowledged, behind closed doors, that the war in Afghanistan was fundamentally flawed and they were knowingly misleading the public. The Post investigation, called the Afghanistan Papers, took 3 years to report, with documents accessed through a Freedom of Information Act legal battle. The documents, based on internal interviews with more than 400 officials, contradict years of the government's public statements, showing that we've ultimately been fighting an unwinnable war. Joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Max Rose, U.S. Representative for New York's 11th District, and an Army combat veteran who served in Afghanistan. Congressman Rose, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, how are you? Thanks so much for having me.
You served, Congressman, in Afghanistan from 2012 to 2013. When you saw the military officials speaking out behind closed doors about the war to the Washington Post, what were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think it's very important to note, as it relates to this report, that this is not an indictment of the soldiers who served in Afghanistan, who served honorably three, four, five, six times. Keep in mind, I just deployed once. That's nothing compared to what we asked of these soldiers, the first time in our nation's history that we have asked our nation's soldiers to deploy so many times. And secondly, we have also asked them to show incredible courageous restraint under an age of counterinsurgency, where limiting civilian casualties is actually priority number one. But with this report, I got to tell you, I wasn't surprised at all, and that's what's horrifying about all of this. You know, Afghanistan is not something that we can solve, and we have got to stop telling the American people that this is something that the American troops, any troops, could ever resolve, ever. This is wasteful, and it is the wrong thing to be doing to our soldiers.
Congressman, to your point, the soldiers are not making these decisions. These are senior officials that are making the decision. And to a large extent, our three presidential administrations that have told the American public that this war is something that was winnable and that must be continued. You have served in Afghanistan as an active duty officer. What does the public not understand or not see about the reality of war on the ground, Congressman?
Well, first of all, I think what the public has not completely wrapped their minds around is that we cannot transition Afghanistan to a developed democracy. You know, there's something in this report that really sticks out, that one village the size of basically a county was given $3 million a day. You know what I could do with $3 million a day in my congressional district? I would kill for that much money. But it was impossible to spend, and it ultimately just leads to corruption. The second thing is that we are often discounting the degree to which the problems in Afghanistan are sectarian, tribal, and political, not necessarily related to a military matter. And that cannot be resolved. We have got to let the good people of Afghanistan resolve that. There's no way, shape, or form that we could step in and build a centralized state there. And as so long as we try to, it is a waste of blood and treasure.
Congressman, again, having served on the ground there and now seeing this report, and we've talked a little bit about this here on The Takeaway, just in terms of the relationship with the current administration and the military as a whole, how do you suspect that this might affect military morale for those troops who, as you said, have been deployed not once but multiple times to the region to fight and are now potentially hearing that this war is unwinnable?
Well, look, soldiers for a very long time in Afghanistan on the ground have understood that this was not winnable. But when soldiers are deployed, they're looking out for their brothers and their sisters. They're looking out for the person to the left of them and the right of them, and that's what they care about. I don't think that any soldier would be shocked to see this report. But what I also think about, though, is not the soldiers that are there right now. It's also the soldiers who we could potentially deploy next year and the year after. To put this into perspective, this past October, we sent soldiers to Afghanistan, potentially, who were not born when we sent our first soldier there, when we deployed our first soldier there. We're now seeing parents who deployed to Afghanistan having their children deployed to Afghanistan. How much longer are we going to do this? And in response, what you see Democrats and Republicans say is, well, we have to do this diplomatically. We have to do this strategically. We have to do this in an intelligent fashion. Well, we're going to be there for the rest of our respective lives if we keep punting the football.
So what
it is at this point ridiculous.
So, Congressman, what should the role of Congress be right now? Should they get involved?
Most certainly Congress should get involved. First of all, there needs to be very high-level, serious investigations centered around this report. Also, Congress has got to take back the right to not only declare war, but to also exercise oversight of war. You know, since the AUMF, we have been killing people across the world and without congressional sanction. So I am fully in favor of repealing the authorization for the use of military force and replacing it with something that is far, far more strident in regards to Congress's responsibilities. Now, on the point of Afghanistan, it's also important to note that Congress retains the right over the purse. There's no reason why Congress should not be stepping in and saying enough is enough. And this is an indictment of the Democratic Party as well, the party that purports to be the party of peace, the party that purports to be the party that says we will not unnecessarily send soldiers into harm's way. It's a disgrace.
Congressman Rose, you serve on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. What is the state of veterans who are coming back from Afghanistan? How are they doing?
Well, first of all, from a cost perspective, we never actually take into account, when we're considering war, the cost of taking care of soldiers thereafter. This war has already exceeded $1 trillion, and it will be far, far more than that when you add in caring for these soldiers. And soldiers are coming home with a complexity of multiple comorbidities that we have not seen with veterans from previous wars. PTS, as well as the effects, the long-term effects of IEDs, something that I personally experienced as well, consequences from burning garbage and having to do that. And the last thing to note as well is that veterans from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq look like the country. We're seeing far more female veterans, LGBTQ veterans, and we have got to make sure that the VA is equipped to address that new population of veterans.
You said that this reminds you of Vietnam. I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of what the parallels there are, even thinking back about the way that the Pentagon Papers were reported. The Washington Post is calling this the Afghanistan Papers. Remind folks why this reminds you of Vietnam.
Well, the parallels are striking, and it speaks to actually larger truths about warfare in general. Once we deploy soldiers, the military naturally, the State Department naturally, our elected officials naturally will try to paint a rosy picture. The reason being is that there's this truth of the domino theory, that we become very afraid of, well, what happens if it looks like we're losing? What happens if we look weak? And I think that we have got to move beyond that. And it takes strong elected officials, strong government officials to stand up and say, we will not commit any more blood and treasure just to look strong. And that's what happened in Vietnam. That is what is happening here in Afghanistan, and we've got to stop it.
Congressman, I have to ask you about what's happening today in Washington, mentioning the Democratic Party, of which you are a member. House leadership will introduce articles of impeachment against the president today. What's your view so far on how this investigation has played out? Many Americans have been watching this play out over weeks, and be curious to know your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, I applaud you on being the only journalist in America that wants to cover something besides impeachment. So this was an absolute delight getting the chance to talk about something else besides impeachment, especially a matter as serious as the war in Afghanistan. Look, when I, from the very beginning on this Ukraine issue, I have said that this is as serious as it gets, all options on the table. And what we have seen is a steady stream of very credible evidence, very credible witnesses who had no reason to come forward but for love of country and but for their respect for the Constitution and the history of this great country. I can't comment on any articles that I haven't seen yet, but keep in mind, next to declaring war, this is the most serious thing that a member of Congress could be doing.
Congressman Max Rose, U.S. Representative for New York's 11th District, and an Army combat veteran who served in Afghanistan. Congressman Rose, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We continue our conversation on the Afghanistan war, the longest war in U.S. history, with an examination of the huge economic toll it's taken. So far, the United States has spent close to $1 trillion on the war, including personnel, equipment, and veterans' health care. And our next guest estimates that the U.S. will continue paying for this war long after it ends.
The United States goes into every one of its wars, from 1812 to Korea and Vietnam, including the long occupation of the Philippines, thinking that war is going to be quick, effective, cheap, controllable, precise, and that it's going to be over when it's over. And in all of those wars, that wasn't the case, and it's not the case here.
Nita C. Crawford is professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Boston University and co-director of the Cost of War Project from Brown and Boston University. Nita, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're talking about Afghanistan. We've been at war for 18 years. Who's been paying for this?
A number of parties, but mostly the American people, but in a kind of deferred way. In 2001, the United States went to war with emergency money and has been funding these wars through emergency resolutions. But in 2000, the United States was in budget surplus. We immediately went into budget deficit. So what that means is we've actually been borrowing to pay for these wars.
And who are we borrowing from?
Well, we're borrowing internally and we're borrowing from other countries. So let's say China holds a lot of our debt, Japan, and then there's internal borrowing.
How much has the bill been so far?
Just looking at DOD and State Department spending, it's about $1 trillion, a little under $1 trillion over the last 18 years and moving into fiscal year 2020, which we're in right now.
And when we talk about the economic costs of war, Nita, what exactly are we talking about here? Weapons, training, supplies? What are the line items, if you will, that make up the economic costs of war?
Well, the biggest part of the budget is often personnel, paying people to go, and that is actually increased. And that's part of the base budget, but that's been growing as well. So we've just been talking about the emergency spending, but there's the base military budget. And in there, you see purchase of equipment to replace equipment that's destroyed or worn out. You also see increases in spending for the health care of the soldiers who've been deployed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And so they need more health care. And there's also money that's been used, even though it's a small portion of this, for reconstruction in Afghanistan, as well as just the bullets and the bombs that are expended in war.
We often hear that there are financial incentives for Americans to go to war. In your studies here, 18 years of this war, are there companies that are making money and benefiting off of the war in Afghanistan, given what we just laid out?
Yeah, there are a couple kinds of actors who make money. One are private contractors, but they've actually died at rates higher than U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. So there are about 3,000 U.S. military who've been killed, and more than 3,000 contractors likely killed, many more injured in Afghanistan. But they make money. They're very well paid. Then there's the corporations like Lockheed and the other companies that make the weapons. Sometimes there's a little bit of money that's lost in the side in terms of bribes. Now, we're told that military spending is good for the economy when actually other sectors produce more jobs per $1 million spent. So if we're thinking about this as a way to boost the economy, it isn't.
President Trump, to your point, has made a big deal about the fact that he's increased military spending. And I'm wondering, has funding for Afghanistan ever been in question under his administration?
In general, the administration has planned to continue this war for the next few years. And he may say that the United States is getting out, but the DOD has in its future projections for budgets, money for Afghanistan into the 2021, 2022, 2023. Absent an agreement, the United States will be in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future.
How much are American taxpayers paying for this war, and are they aware of their contributions to this?
Afghanistan is costing, as I said, about $50 billion a year on average, or nearly $1 trillion just in the direct spending. But we're going to be paying for this war into the future. There's this myth that war ends when it's over. But what we see is we've got about 4 million veterans from Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq and Syria, and we'll be paying for those veterans' care over the next 30 years.
And as we've said, we've been at this war for 18 years. How have different presidential administrations compared when it comes to how they've spent or budgeted for this war?
All of the administrations have basically taken what the Pentagon has asked for and said, let's do that. And then Congress has sometimes added to that. So in any one year, Congress might say, okay, you've asked for this amount of money, let's give you a little bit more. All on the reasoning that we should be supporting the troops uncritically. So that's led to basically steady funding for these wars, steadily budgeted. Now, the spending for the war in Afghanistan peaked in around 2011, and it's gone down since then as the number of troops have declined, but it's basically steady funding the last few years.
The House is set to vote this week and pass on the annual defense authorization bill, which is expected to be over $730 billion. And last year, Congress approved a similarly large spending bill. What does that defense authorization bill tell us about more funding going to Afghanistan, or just where we stand in general towards defense spending as a country?
War's consequences are essentially baked into the base budget now. And you see this in the way that the Trump administration added a new category of spending, which they call increases to the DOD base budget due to the post 9/11 wars. It's OCO, Overseas Contingency Operations for the base, which is a new category of spending they put in last year and this year's budget. And that's essentially taking money out of the emergency funding and putting it directly into the base budget, even though it's an emergency appropriation. So what that's telling you in English is that wars have inflated base military spending. The United States has not engaged in downsizing, that is, base realignment and closure, even though the DOD says there's 20% excess capacity at bases. So the war has institutionalized increased spending.
Nita Crawford, professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Boston University and the co-director of the Cost of War Project. Professor Crawford, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.